It's been an intense weekend of racing at the highest level from around the world. We've seen the EWS at Les Ors in France. At the same time, World Cup downhill and cross country took place in Andorra on the weekend. And of course, racing is not just about racing, it's about the tech as well. I'm joined by two guys who know tech like no other people. Andrew Dodd and Henry Quinney, of course, who used to mechanic on a World Cup downhill team.
Yeah, back in the day, yeah.
Yeah. Guys, quickly talk through the highlights of the weekend. First of all, talk about Les Ors, which is located just to the 2 o'clock from Dean, which is where the Trans-Provence starts.
So yes, of course.
It's in the heart of enduro territory, right?
Yeah. Well, an incredibly close race.
Yeah.
I think a very popular winner. I couldn't believe that over, you know, seven stages, 45 minutes plus of racing, 0.13 average per stage.
It was
0.9 total. It's absolutely mad.
Yeah. And of course, Ed Masters, his first EWS race.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy that comes from a downhill background. That's his first sport, really, isn't it?
But he is just such an all-round athlete. Mm-hmm. He's, he trains in Queenstown, where I used to live, and he has this persona of a party boy that doesn't take it too seriously. I can promise you.
That's always a good mask, isn't it? That's
He is, ruthless when it comes to training.
Yeah, and of course, there was a lot of incidents during the weekend. I mean, Sam Hill had a puncture on his first run.
Yeah.
He missed the second run because of the chairlift.
The chairlift stopped.
Yeah, what happened with that?
So he was just...
He
still had to make... So basically, I saw a thing on Nigel Page's Instagram saying, so he had a puncture, which happens, lost 45 seconds. Uh-huh. Okay, went to the second stage, got stuck on the chairlift, then had a 3 or 4 minute full-on sprint from the top of the lift to get into it. And literally it was like, in you go straight away. So then got landed with a 30-second time penalty.
Henry, any conspiracy theories from the chairlift stopping? I mean, why did the chairlift stop?
Wacky races.
I heard there was.
The weather was good, right? There was no high winds or thunderstorms?
No, honestly, I mean, but what can they do with the stage time? I mean, then you have to have a stage time start, and it has to be... Yeah.
But you can't stop the plan for Sam Hill, right?
Yeah.
As much as most people would like it them to.
Yeah, I was going
to
say. Yeah.
It's racing, haven't they, at the end of the day?
Yeah. Several hundred miles to the west of Les Ors.
Never eat shredded wheat, just in your head there. Not the elephant squirt water.
He probably doesn't know that one.
But is it not the what?
Never eat shredded wheat, northeast, southwest, not the elephant squirt water.
I'm just trying to think of the map. It's west.
Not the elephant one.
It's west, and it was in the heat and dust of Andorra. Yeah. I have never seen so much dust at a World Cup event.
I don't think anyone has. That was pretty shocking, wasn't it? And altitude as well. So you had those two things together.
Did you see that photo from... It was actually in the downhill, but in Alex Phil's, he had a picture of him standing next to where the track was, and then in the rut, and it's about 4 foot deeper.
Of dust.
In this one spot, yeah.
Of dust.
It's just been bench cut by riders. So gnarly.
So, interesting race, Doddy. Interesting race.
So many events.
Race, by the looks of it.
Yeah, so, I mean, well, where do you start? I think Andre Sink... he obviously didn't win, but he was leading and he pulled out. He was basically grabbing his chest.
No, this is the Czech guy.
This is insane. So basically what is described as atrial fibrillation, so it's a rhythmic disturbance of your heart. Friends have actually had this before. The hearts have gone super high and super low.
Yeah. Sounds like you're on a Saturday morning after a night out on Friday, isn't it?
Yeah, with you. but on a more serious note, on a course like that, they would have been redlining.
Yeah,
it'd have been at max heart rate. Where it's like I think it's on the wall climb.
Yeah,
it looks so physical anyway. And if the top of the top are absolutely struggling, you know what that's like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he grabbed his heart and he actually pulled out the race. But it does seem, looking on his Instagram, that he's okay.
That's cool.
I definitely want to send my thoughts.
And then, of course, big news. I mean, you're obviously in a massively mountainous area, and the women's race was won by someone from the Netherlands.
From the lowlands of the earth. And Terpstra, fantastic, what a ride.
Yeah.
I think when she was quizzed at the end by the interviewee on the Red Bull TV link thing, she wasn't even aware that she was the first woman for the Netherlands to take a World Cup.
Wow.
Which was amazing. She just rode an unbelievable race. Great tactics, really strong.
Am I right in thinking she pushed Kate Courtney really hard in Novi Mesto before...
Yes.
Having that chain drop.
Yeah, she's been up there all year.
And she spoke so, sounds stupid, but eloquently, but also honestly. You could tell, I saw an interview with her after that, and you could see just like she just seemed so vulnerable, and you just like your heart went out to her. So it's so amazing that she got some salvaged some pride from this one, I guess.
And of course, then there was the previous day was the World Cup downhill. We're talking about Dutch people, and I'm trying to think how many Dutch people won a World Cup downhill. You got Basta Bever.
Basta Bever
won South Africa in 1997.
Yeah.
And
we've already spoken about Randy Spangler and great mountain bike names, and we didn't go over Basta Bever.
Basta Bever.
Basta Bever.
Sensational. That's a good name, to be fair.
That is a Randy Spangler and Basta Bever.
See, listen, it really kicked off. It really kicked off on Saturday at the World Cup downhill. Loic Bruni taking his third win of the year.
He's on point.
You know, I sat here at the beginning of the year with the Don, and we wondered who was going to be the person that grabs the bull by the horns and, you know, takes hold of the World Cup series this year. Obviously, it was Amaury Piron not so long ago. Mm-hmm. Sadly, Gwyn seems to be out of action again. He really is going through a bit of a nightmare phase, isn't he?
We were talking about this the other day, that even beyond the results, there's the whole mental thing now, that it almost feels like... No disrespect to him, almost feels that he's out of the game completely at the moment. It must be such a knock to try and mentally recover from.
Yeah, he's going through some pretty stormy waters, isn't he?
But do you not think that perhaps that was such an important part of why he was so good before? Having a racer at the top that had at one point never had a significant injury.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't, you know, that sort of thing, it must give you that kind of... He used to have an aura of invincibility.
He was strong, and he also, I think, had nothing to lose because he was coming from virtually nothing to win everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then now it's a very different thing.
Well, what you touched on there is a huge subject, isn't it? About how a rider can come back from injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, some of the greatest racers that came back from injury were the likes of Steve Peat.
Mm.
I mean, he came back knock after knock after knock, and he'd still win a World Cup.
Yeah.
Whereas you look at maybe someone like Sam Hill, you know, when he started riding for Specialized, he had a really good start to Specialized, then he took a few hits, and then Sam Hill's confidence really did take a knock, didn't it?
It did, but I mean, you know, what I think Sam Hill has always been, you know, well, very good at is, much like I'm sure Martin Mace has got this process targeting Mont Saint Anne. Was it 20 when he won in World Saint Anne? Didn't he have that in Maribor? Had that crash? Sorry, it was the season that Maribor was in, because the following round at Fort Bill, he had that crash with his shoulder.
Then
he just targets Maribor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe that's something that Gwyn can maybe do now, just phone it, hone in, and
start fresh.
Yeah.
Let's not forget Rachel Athan won the women's, taking her to 39 World Cup wins.
Mm-hmm.
Just two off the record of Anne Caroline Chausson. That is massive.
She's going to get it, isn't she?
Massive. She has to.
She's now the most podiums of a woman of any World Cup racer.
All right, didn't know that. Right.
So more podiums, but two less wins.
Do you think, obviously, we'll go into the detail of each of the EWS and the cross country in a bit, but I just want to ask one question. Do you think Rachel will be playing things safe just to maybe get that 41, 42 World Cup wins in the bag? Or do you think she has to go all out?
I can't imagine that would be on her agenda.
Mm.
She's a racer. She just wants to win.
And
she's really calculated anyway. She rode really smart at the top.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where a lot of people were making mistakes. She was really clean.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think she'll get it in the bag.
Right, guys, I want to talk about a bigger picture stuff. We're going to go into detail now about EWS, cross-country and downhill. Before we do that, I want to look at... I've been looking at the brands that are successful at each of these disciplines. Now, you look at downhill and it's got, like, say, Troy Brosnan on Canyon. You get Loic Bruni on Specialized. Amaury Piron on Commensal, and of course Loris Bergier and Luke Shaw on Santa Cruz. You go to Enduro, different types of brands again. You've got Rocky Mountain, Canyon, GT, Pivot, Nuke Proof, Ibis, Lapierre, and Yeti. Different, you know, lots of those names don't actually feature on World Cup Downhill at the moment. Especially, you know, someone like Yeti, who was, you know, the days on when Gwyn and Sam Blankensop won on a Yeti. They don't seem to feature as much in World Cup Downhill as they used to. And then, of course, you've got cross country and Scott Cannondale, Thomas, BMC, Orbea.
American Eagle.
Isn't it funny how there's different brands focus on different disciplines? And I think there's probably one brand which is constant throughout the disciplines. It's actually Canyon.
Yes.
Obviously, it's got Mathieu van der Poel, who rides cross country, but he's not racing cross country at the moment, right, Daddy?
He's kind of out of the picture at the moment. I think he's focusing on the Olympics.
You know,
it was announced he wasn't going to race at Andorra, but I think we kind of knew that anyway.
Yeah,
but I think he showed his hand. He's like, guys, I could do this and this and this and this, and I'm coming for that.
But it's crazy, you know, like a brand of Canyon can be so strong and so disciplined.
Yeah.
But do you find that, say, Canyon are a great example, or maybe Trek, who also have programs going through, where they seem to have, much like you'd almost get in a football team, the way they hire their riders seems to be like with Nikolai and Brosnan, not necessarily riders.
Do you mean Flora and Nikolai?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, just super consistent. And they, like, Canyon seem to have danger men always there. And similar to how Trek seem to have up and coming, like Anton Cooper, like, look at their downhill squad, Reese Wilson, people coming through.
Fabian Burrell 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago, when we started EMBN, and Fabian said, oh, yeah, I've just signed this Flora Nicolai guy. He's going to be one of the best riders in the world. And I'd never heard of him. Not that I know.
To be fair, Fabian's got a unique ability to pick people like that.
That's the same with Dimitri Tordo.
Exactly.
Well.
It was Dimitri Tordo again. Well. Again, another Canyon rider there. And incredible.
But do you think that's indicative of the way you seem to get it with French, maybe not the downhill so much, but like Adrian Daly flies under the radar?
Do you know what? We're going to talk about the French in detail later on, Henry. I got some massive facts for you about French riders. I mean, it is definitely a French resurgence that we're in the middle of at the minute, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can we go and talk detail about EWS?
Yes.
Let's go into depth there. Obviously, Ed Masters came back pretty much at the finish to win that event.
Yeah. And wasn't it amazing as well? I'd say a standout result for me is obviously Isabel Cordoria, another fantastic showing. Mm. But Rafaela Richter, I hope I pronounced that right, she came off a sixth place in Leergang to then, you know, we talk about the crossing over of disciplines.
Yeah.
And that's someone that's sixth place in Leergang. And if you look at where, Commensal lady, so I mean,
Ravenel,
when she was raised to Croatia, I think she only finished like seventh. You know, so it's amazing for like a privateer to come through, smash a World Cup next weekend, be on EWS podium in second. Yeah. I think is just such a story there. Like, fair play to her.
It's great. I mean, it's great for Intense to be winning races, isn't it? I mean, obviously, there's this grin in the downhill, but it's great to, you know, they've actually got their bikes.
It is.
It's been a bit of a departure for them, isn't it?
Cordoria's team, a factory team.
It's a Mavic. I think it's Mavic is the factory supporter.
The factory support.
Right, okay.
So they're not actually.
But, you know, you were saying about brands and things like that. And, you know, you really associate, for instance, Sam Hill with Nukeproof. That's a real strong association. For whatever reason, when you say Isabel Cordoria, I don't immediately think Intense.
No.
I don't. You don't see that much. I don't know why that is.
Why don't you think they put money into Enduro?
Why don't Intense put money into Enduro? Well, are we certain that they don't put money into Enduro?
Yeah, I'm sure they don't. Like, who do they sponsor factory-wise? Like, they don't have a factory rider, or do they?
Is it harder to get visibility in Enduro the way it's covered?
Henry, I'm talking about the physicality of Enduro. I mean, these guys really do have to put their bodies on the line. I mean, seven or eight stages on the weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, comes off the back of a really tough weekend the week before.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard old discipline, right? Is.
And I think, you know, I once read a thing, I think Jared Graves, when he came from, because he was proper, super muscly, you know, pound for pound.
Yeah, incredibly. I mean, he's pretty, you know, one of the most successful four cross races ever.
Yeah.
Also raced downhill too.
And BMX successful Olympics.
Level, yeah. Been talking to the physique here, right?
Yeah, he dropped 13 kilograms.
13 kilos?
I'm pretty sure it was 13 kilograms.
That's insane.
It was a huge amount when he went over to Enduro.
Mm-hmm.
Just to be lean and...
Not carrying weight you don't need.
Yeah. And, Eddie Masters...
Sam Hill did the same, didn't he?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think... Don't they say the optimum weight for an Enduro race is 70 kilos?
Yeah.
Now, guys, I want to talk to you about bikes. Now, it seems to me... I've watched quite a few weigh-ins from the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the bikes now are 170, 180 mil travel.
Yeah.
15 kilo weight on average. Now, I remember when Mondrick came out with their first Summum downhill bike in 2010, Doddy, or 2009?
2009, I think, yeah.
All aluminium chassis weighed in at 32 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a World Cup, and that was a bike that won World Cup downhill, right?
Mm-hmm.
32 pound, 200 mil travel. Now we're looking at EWS bikes weighing pretty much the same weight or a little bit more.
But can you remember when Fabian Burrell, I think it was at Cairns, went and ran a single crown fork because it was lighter? So imagine what But the weight of his bike was weighed in it.
Would have been lighter.
Super light.
It would have been lighter.
Yeah, I bet you
would have been sub 30 pounds.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, to talk kilos and pounds here, but I'm sure we can...
We mix everything. It's the bike industry.
But I think I'm always a kilos guy, but I think an easy way to remember it is 30 pounds for a trail bike used to be the benchmark, and now with Enduro, it's going up.
Yeah, it's going up. It does seem to be getting higher. Yeah.
But
so what is going on there?
But
then?
I think the bikes have ridden harder than most other things.
They have.
And harder
tracks.
You
look at a downer bike. A downer bike has, don't get me wrong, they've got to be strong, but they've got survivor track. A track. Mm. Enduro bikes were ridden over many tracks.
Yeah.
A lot harder, sometimes almost runaway train style.
Yeah.
You've got to keep the wheels in one piece. You're not always going to have the lightest wheels. You're going to have rim inserts. You're going to have downhill tyres on a trail bike. There's so many things that go on them.
I would imagine that, I know it was a stat that was true maybe of a year or two ago, maybe, you know, it's only five or six races. I think that was possibly the first EWS won in the men's on carbon wheels.
Really?
I think
that's
so
interesting.
Crikey.
Everyone else, like,
yeah,
you think Sam Hill, Greg Callahan,
high risk of cracking,
all these sort of thing, they were always on alloy.
I mean, when it comes to wheels, let's talk wheels and tech like that then. I mean, now you can't generalize on a material. You can have overly stiff carbon wheels, you can have overly stiff aluminium wheels. So, but in a discipline like Enduro, where you're putting your body against the line for so many runs, is there not an argument where you should be running quite softer style wheels?
I would say so, for forgiveness, at least on the front end, but you are starting to see that with wheel development, a stiffer wheel on the rear and a softer up front. But what Henry was saying about the material of them, you would think, all right, you might get a lighter carbon wheel, but an alloy rim, if you do ding it real bad, you can straighten it.
Yeah.
You can, like, bodge it at the side of the trail and carry on.
Neil and I saw Canyon Factory team, it'd be a year ago. They were grinding things out, pasting things, bonding things, because you can only keep...
You keep the same rim, don't you?
You keep the same rim, and if you change the rim, you get a penalty.
Yeah.
So they were whacking things and laughing at... at what they were doing, because if that was a downhill, they'd have a spare wheel.
Fresh wheel.
Just chuck it in.
So the weekend's race, there was a lot of uplift involved.
Mm-hmm.
So they're running these bikes on uplift orientated tracks, and also ones where you do a lot of pedaling as well.
Yeah.
So,
but even when I spec a bike now, say if I was to build up my bike, weight is something I just wouldn't factor in. I wouldn't have the tyres.
You're world class, Henry.
I think it's because I'm so far from world class. It wouldn't make any difference.
Unless you're racing, I don't think it does make a difference. The bike's just got to ride well, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's actually sort of a Kona thing, and they said, like, fun bikes ride light. If you have a bike that rides well, you go, oh, this is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
You can have the lightest bike in the world, but if it feels like crap, it will feel heavy and rubbish.
I want to move from slightly bit tech, unless you want to talk a bit more about tech, Doddy, Enduro.
We'll probably come back to it, can't we?
I want to talk about the French. Obviously, the French have been incredibly strong at Enduro from the outset. I mean, they were the country that probably invented Enduro. They didn't want it to become a sport, but it became a sport. I'm looking at the top 20 in the last few weeks. Now, at Canazai last week, eight of the top 20 were French. Madeira, 7 of the top 20, and Tasmania, less so. But this is a trend that's been there ever since the beginning of EWS. I mean, in Finale, the opening EWS race in 2013. Sorry, Punta Ala, I meant in 2013. 9 of the top 20 were French. Fabien Barrel won that race. But I'm looking at the current French names, right? So I'm going to read some of them out. So we've got Damien Otton, Johan Borelli, Alex Kerr, Floyd Nicolai, Adrian Daly, Pigeon, Miguel, Lapierre, Denior, Gallet, and Tordo. Now, it wasn't so long ago, right? Probably in that first EWS season of 2013, you got the likes of Clément, Lowe, Absalon, Gracia, Arnold, Brian Regnier, Quer, Borel, Vulios. All those names aren't really in EWS at the minute.
Yeah.
So there's a whole new wave of French riders who are still dominating. How do they do it?
Talked about this years ago, probably with you, in fact, with the downhill respect.
Mm.
And I think French seem to do mountain sports just so well. The federations they have, and with ski tuition, you know, when they're younger at school age, it's just bred into them to do that kind of activity.
Yeah.
They've been doing enduro since before it had a name.
Isn't it not or is it potentially just indicative of whether, you know, kind of organic, like grassroots, i.e. just lots of racing, is that's part of the culture, or artificial, more like perhaps you'd see when Switzerland really put a lot of investment in cross-country racing. Mm. And the way they do cross-country racing in, for the juniors in Switzerland is you seed by a trials course on your cross-country bike in the same setup.
Mm.
So it's all these sort of things. Mm. And I think grassroots stuff, whether it's just by, yeah, culture and big mountain riding, it yeah. does make a huge difference. You see, yeah. you know, look at UK road cycling.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
It, yeah, it yeah, is yeah. just yeah. a case of let's get bums on seats and get people yeah. riding their bikes, and you're going to yeah. get a stronger crop.
Yeah, and they got, you know, they've got the environment and they got that culture, haven't they? And mm. it's like, but to have a fresh, like, there's probably 10 French mm. riders who dominate the top 20 now,
mm.
and they were like 6 years ago, but they're a fresh bunch of names as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely mind blowing how they have such high quality mountain bike racers, and they've all got the right mindset. I mean, Jack mentioned earlier, you know, the likes of Florian Nicolai and Dimitri Tordo. Fabien Barel said they were going to come and do well, and here we are. They yeah. are dominating.
If we went 4 or 5 years ago, though, we'd probably be having a similar conversation about British downhill.
We would.
Oh my God,
you can't even get to a World Cup team.
That's a whole different conversation.
That is a massive conversation, which we'll return to that in the downhill section.
Yeah.
You throw me totally off sync, you know. We're talking about the French, blah, blah, blah. But yes, of course, it was a New Zealander who actually won the race.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there's an American, Richie Rude, who is doing incredibly well at the moment. And of course, Sam Hill.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just the French, right?
No, it's not. Interestingly, when you think about Eddie and his obviously incredible enduro rider, how much time living that van life he spends on French trails, which I think probably helps a bucket load, learning how to just endo turn yeah. and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But I mean, like, do it consistently
yeah, yeah.
a lot.
Makes a difference.
A season or two in Morzine and that sort of stuff, riding, you know, in San Juan EWS venues, mm-hmm. I would imagine will help no end.
Who's going to win the EWS series, Henry?
Oh, I mean, it's blown wide open. I can almost imagine Nicolai winning it, but I would love him to get a win on the way.
Yeah.
I think it would obviously be an incredible achievement and you couldn't take it away from him, but I think you want to see someone that's won at least one. Right?
Yeah, 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 totally.
I think Sam Hill, though, Sam Hill gets it done. He salvages points and that's the mark of a champion.
Totally.
He just salvages points.
Yeah. Cool. Moving across to cross country, Doddy.
Yeah.
At Andorra. I'm really interested in how all these different sports compare. You talk about cross country rider weights. Well, how much does a world-class cross-country okay. rider weigh?
All right, well, so look at Nino for that. So yeah. he's 68 kilos and he's right. so 150 pounds.
How tall is he?
5'7 or 173
yeah.
metres.
Yeah.
His bike, if you're interested, 9.3 kilos.
Hold on, man, 9.3
kilos. About 20 pounds.
Yeah.
So not a lot, and that's a full-size bike.
Yeah. But what gets me is I've seen on some of your pre-show notes how a lot of them now you... don't use dropper posts?
Yeah, so I think there's less men that use dropper posts than women. Well, there's a few schools of thought here. So you've got to think of the control element, the safety element, and then the speed element. All right, so the speed element, the obvious one is drop your post, you're going to go quicker.
Yeah.
But then the bikes are going to have to get heavier to cope with the speeds that you're going to ride at.
Ah, right? Right, yeah.
Then you look at the safety element, and I think some riders are riding smart. Like, I notice that most of the women now tend to be using dropper posts, so... in the top three, yeah, Anne Terpstra, she was running a hardtail with a dropper post. Yolanda Neff, full sus dropper post. Bella Moyna on a hardtail with no dropper post. But Bella Moyna's strength is climbing, it's not descending, mm-hmm. and she reeled everyone in just with her, like, formidable strength, really.
Do you really think they would be hammering through those technical sections that much faster with a dropper post?
Yeah.
I mean, they're going pretty fast at the moment, right?
If we just use Nino as a case study,
yeah.
right, as far as a cross-country racer goes, if you were to mould a cross-country racer, he's probably the optimum. Like, the optimum body sort of stature, endurance, the way he rides a bike, that bike's pretty much designed around him,
mm-hmm.
doesn't need a drop post. And he said before, you could definitely ride one faster, but it's not the point. The bike is designed to be ridden the way it is by someone like him.
Yeah.
And he'll start putting... he's already running 30mm rims. And he's running wide tyres.
Hold on. Shirt is running 30mm
yeah.
rims.
Yeah, he's got wide rims on his bike. Crikey. And they're running super low tyre pressures now.
Like some what? Of what them, are we talking?
Under 20 psi.
What?
Yeah, right.
No!
This is going to depend on the course, the tyre carcass, the size, some are running 2.4s.
They're all tubeless, right?
Pretty much, yeah. Some people have dabbled with tubular.
Danel, right? Yeah. World Cup Danel is pretty much all tubeless. Yeah. Sorry, Daddy.
Things are changing. The courses are getting gnarly. They do need the support and the tyres, just like downhill riders would, but they need the traction. And if you watch any sort of cross-country now, you can see the bikes tracking the ground. The bikes are working hard all the time.
How much travel has Nina Scherter's bike got?
100 mil.
Right.
Front and rear. Don't get any more than that, really.
So what about Flückiger in second and Vaccini?
Yeah, so he was full sus and drop and post.
But how much travel are those guys running?
The same.
Right. But 100 mil.
Universal, pretty much. You might get a few 80 mils, but 100 mil is the max.
In a way, wasn't that race a really good distillation of the problem? In that catching up is one thing, but overtaking, and it's often you can just sneak past people on a little break and having the lightest bike possible. Because once you go to a dropper seat post, then often you have to go to heavier tyres to then stop cracking rims or heavier rims. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Makes a massive...
Well, and actually, just being able to cling on and just that, it can literally be won by maybe what? A handful of watts?
So Nino, who won over Matthias Flückiger, right? Flückiger is 65 kilos, Nino 68. They're both about 5'7".
Yeah.
Right?
Seems to be a theme going on there, doesn't it?
Right, they're all fairly similar. But, you know, they ride slightly differently. Flückiger, technically, is phenomenal. He's so good and he's so aggressive. And he shut the door at Nino several times. Nino tried to get past on that one big climb. You could see Nino was, like, buckled with power, like, ready to launch on him.
Yeah.
And he was just about to pull past him. And Flückiger was like, you're not having this one. And let him go.
We talked carbon wheels a minute ago. Now, these guys... For sure, be riding.
Yeah, carbon wheels is the most part. The bikes are super, super light.
Yeah. And what kind of spoke count are you going to find on a World Cup cross country?
24s, 28s.
Yeah. Right.
But quite some typical spoked wheels, nothing too outrageous.
And definitely full carbon chassis as well. Or should I say frame, not chassis?
Pretty much. Yeah. You're going to get the odd alloy one in here and there.
Yeah.
But yeah, and there's still a mix of hardtails and full sus because whatever they've raced in XCC, which is quite often the day before, 2 days before, they have to race the same in the in the XCO. So they have to choose what their forte is.
Yeah. Disc brakes all round, 100 mils, 120s, 160s, what are we looking at?
160s, I reckon, would be the...
Yeah, down to 140s. So some of the girls are running as their lighter riders, make the most of being off some weight.
Yeah.
So there you go. Should we talk downhill, guys?
Yeah.
Downhill. Let's do it. World Cup downhill.
Actually, before, can I just say something about cross country? It's been bugging me. because of all the racing and all the cool things that happened over the weekend, there's only one that really stands out to me, and that's Jenny Risveds.
Right.
Mm. So the last time, I might be wrong on this, the last time she won a race was about 2016. 2017, she went for a real battle with herself. Mm. And 2018, she actually retired from the sport with mental health issues. Now, she came back to this race expecting to just ride, and she got fifth.
Wow,
she rode an incredible race. And you could see what it meant to her when she was hugging people at the finish line. Mm. In fact, there's a photo floating around of her hugging Pauline Ferrand-Prevot. And you can see the emotion in her face. You know, it gives me goosebumps. I think it's incredible for her to be dealing with what she's gone through and to come back from that.
Yeah.
To have some fun and get some flipping podium.
That's so
nice. And she rode an incredible race as well.
And those races, obviously, she won World Cups in 2016, but she's also the reigning Olympic champion.
Yeah, of course she is. Yeah.
Huge, you know? And I think it's fantastic.
And for her to tackle that, you know, it must have been a really hard thing to actually say, like, I can't do this. I need some time to figure myself out a bit.
Yeah.
I think it's something that's starting to be talked about more in sport.
Yes.
But still not enough, to be honest.
But also, I think she's touched upon it before with there was issues around the conversation she was having with her national federation leading up to World Champs. Things like, you know, sponsors, there's a lot of conflict. And I think she's mentioned it before that riding wasn't the safe haven it once was. It was actually something that... And I just think, you know, we all do have mental health.
Yeah.
It's in obviously varying states and conditions, and more power to her for being so open about it. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, massively.
Yeah.
What a performance.
Well, totally. And I guess, you know, there's pressures that those races come under, which, you know, a lot of us would have got no idea on, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Talking about pressure, downhill in Andorra.
That was wild.
Now, the track. Let's talk about the track first of all. The track starts off, it's pretty mellow. Mm. It's pretty mellow. There's some roots and stuff like that. And then it gets progressively insaner as you get down
rough
the bank.
Rough as old boots, some would say.
It's rough, and I mean, I've ridden there on many occasions, and it's an absolute nightmare in terms of line choice. There's so many lines there. And as we saw in the final, I mean, I think Virgil actually was one of the first people to show there were alternatives. But yeah, one of the all-time tracks, I think, on the World Cup circuit. Jack, would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty good.
And I think it made for good TV as well, right? Mm.
No, it's really good.
It's certainly really exciting.
Certainly a lot better than the old Andorra track from the original one.
Well, there's been a couple there. I mean, talking of old Andorra tracks, you know, some of the previous winners of Andorra, G. Atherton,
yeah,
Steve Peats, Danny Hart. It's been really good.
I forgot that Danny Hart.
It's been good hunting territory for the Brits there. Yeah. And of course, then you've got Rémi Thirion, who won on a common sal on home soil in 2013.
That was a banging race, that one as well. Yeah, that was fantastic. Yeah.
I think that was probably one of the all-time World Cup downhill races.
Yeah, I think so.
Brosnan won, winning his... Actually, Brosnan's now won two World Cup races.
That was his second, eh?
That was his second. His first World Cup win was in Fort William.
I thought he was going to snag it again, I've got to say.
I thought he would get it.
He's clean.
I thought he'd get it. But, I mean, when Virgier came down, it was something else. Yeah. Obviously, Virgier won there last year. Now, the qualification was won by Loic Bruni with Troy Brosnan second, Amaury Piron in third, Loris Virgier fourth, and David Trummer in fifth place. When we look back at the highlights of the World Cup in Andorra, I think one thing sticks out to me, and it's the Italian... Van Klebelsberg,
the Denim Destroyer.
Oh yeah,
but he's fantastic. I think it's actually there's a great Eddie Masters quote from I think it was is it Brian Cookson or something? He was the UCI head honcho.
Yeah,
and Eddie Masters was there, not looking all that professional.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy said, "Pull your socks up. You should look professional." And he said, "I'm not a professional." You know what I mean? Like, and it's so true. I think it's almost this great, like, it's so in your face. It's like, this guy's a privateer making it work. Mm-hmm. Speaking of privateers, David Trummer, similar sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's,
yeah.
He's a car mechanic. You know?
And do you know what? David Trummer was actually in the green. He was in the green for all but the first section of the track. He messed up the first section, but then he was green all the way down the hill, which is, you've got to take your hat off.
Yeah.
In terms of tech from Andorra... Now, we saw all week that Greg Minnaar had been tinkering with the chainstay of his bike to make it longer.
Yeah.
Some new dropouts. As a World Cup mechanic, Henry, are these the kind of things you do mid-season, or is it something you do at the beginning of the season? Yeah. Or is it the fact that World Cup is... I mean, World Cup historically has been the testing ground, the proving ground for mountain biking. Mm-hmm. Mountain biking went through a massive transition between 1993 in 2000, where we saw travel and materials change massively. But in this day and age, is it something you do mid-season, or is it something that should have been done?
I think it
between October and March.
You know, the problem is there's the perfect conceptual bike that is obviously doesn't exist, and people are always trying to get as close to that as possible. You know, like when I was working with Kenta, we changed frame halfway through the season,
right?
Which is a huge thing.
New design or size?
New design. Yeah. New design. You do hear why it's going between...
Off for season is crazy, isn't it?
I mean, it's not something you want to do. But he would have tested a lot. It's not like he probably just flung it on for that race and thought, let's have at it.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
We're looking back to, I think actually, was it Steve Peat's last World Cup win in Andorra in 2009? Anyway, 2009, he actually jokingly said on Instagram, "Oh, here's me winning in 2009 on my kid's bike." I mean, these things should have been sorted a long time ago, right?
But those chainstays, I think they're 480 or something like that.
Yeah, pretty long, aren't they?
Which is, and it's just, it just goes to, in the bike industry, we're so kind of what's going on with the Joneses, but the ones we're looking at are the ones... winning World Cups. I want to have Greg Minnaar's bike. Are you sure?
Yeah, exactly.
I'd never get around a bloody turn.
Well, you say that. I mean, Greg Minnaar is tall, but what it's all about is having the balance between the rear centre and the front centre, and it seemed to me that's what he was tinkering with.
Yeah. You said he couldn't get enough front-end grip, so which explains longer chainstay, you weight the front more.
Yeah, exactly.
So perfect.
But surely they'd have different chainstay bikes. I mean, Fabian Borel was doing this 15 years
he
ago.
He was cutting and shutting bikes for Walton, wasn't he?
He had different chainstay lengths, he had different front end lengths, he had different head angles. Mm. I mean, surely that's the way of a World Cup racer,
but
right?
I think you're right. I think that's a really good point.
I
do think you just come across something very valid there. I'd say there are two schools of thought. There are riders that just say, I don't have infinite resources. I don't have the capacity to be able to fine-tune that. So you know what? I'm actually going to almost deliberately just focus on the mental side of things. The bike's the bike,
mm-hmm.
and that's just it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I agree with that.
But then I think there may be some riders who are in the minority, such as Greg Minnaar, who are constantly like, we can get more out of this. You're Fabian Bruyels, we can get more out of this. But it takes a particular type of mental strength to cope with that. And it also takes resources to be able to access that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, and also you have to be quite an intuitive type of person to understand what those changes are doing.
Yes.
And I think because he's had to make do with bikes that are far too small for him for so long,
he's finally
got on a bike that fits.
Yeah, yeah.
And now he's suddenly understanding a whole new realm of, like, you know, minuscule adjustments.
The Minnaar renaissance actually happened a few years ago when he did have the largest saddle bike, and his results went from a downward trajectory to an upward trajectory, and he started winning again, which I'm sure is partly due to the confidence he got from riding a bike that fitted him.
Mm.
When we're talking about tech again on World Cup Downhill, now, isn't it funny that, you know, you see the likes of Fox, the big hitters, Fox suspension,
mm-hmm.
RockShox suspension, and then the first three of the four World Cup Downhills have been won on Olin's by Loic Bruni, and I know him and Jack, his mechanic, they do a ton of pre-season testing with telemetry and getting the optimum settings, and they have a few different settings for different tracks. Surely that's a good way to do things, right? So you just focus, when you get to a World Cup Downhill track, all you're focusing on is to get to the quickest speed possible on that hill.
Mm-hmm.
The right line, the right pace, the right mindset, the right tyres, all those different elements, because there's a huge amount of elements to deal with on a World Cup weekend, right?
Yeah, totally. And I think...
My point was that a company like Olin's, which are pretty small really in terms on World Cup scene, you know, obviously not compared to what they are on MotoGP where they're like massive, mm-hmm. but in downhill terms they're pretty small and they're actually dominating.
They are quite small.
But you could also argue it might be easier to do that when you're a smaller brand. You're more able to refine and make these small changes, whereas you look at Fox and you look at RockShox, it's a huge picture. Mm-hmm. OEM bike sales, cross-country, downhill, hybrid bikes, you know, you name it, they make everything for everything.
Yeah.
You know, and Olin's are clearly focused on just significant performance.
Gwyn was testing a prototype Fox shot when he did his shoulder?
Yeah.
In that American race.
People are always testing prototype stuff.
Yeah. I mean, also, I think prototype is such a strange misnomer downhill. People are always testing prototype carbon frames with this assumption that it can be changed and refined when the mould's already there. They've already booked their slot in the factory, and that's the carbon frame that's coming out. You know what I mean? And it comes with this digital camo. Oh my God, we need to see. It's like, mate, they are just having a laugh because everyone's talking about this prototype frame.
Yeah.
There's not a prototype, that's production. And yeah. I think that's sometimes the buying power compared to MotoGP.
There's also a tax thing with prototypes, isn't there?
Is there?
Don't pay tax on them, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I can see. Do you know what?
You can have a prototype watch and a prototype car and a prototype.
Last thing to do with Shox, I'm going to just. 2017. Hoog, who was Alex Fowle mechanic, made his own shock.
I remember CNC that, yeah, everything. Yeah.
It was only internally adjustable.
Yeah.
But actually, a lot of like high speed rebound adjustment on forks, that's just to give you a clicker. That's not something that actually is performance derived. That is so they can go, we've got four adjustments, even though a lot of people really don't want this fourth one. We need the hole to be as big as possible, because why would you want to restrict oil flow for small bumps?
Yeah, exactly.
But hey-ho.
Guys. To the race, then. I think we'll all agree that Loris Vergier's run was absolutely insane. I mean, 5 seconds quicker. I've never seen anything like it.
Mm.
And then everyone thought, including Warner and Claudio, they're like, there's no way anyone's going to beat that time.
Mm-hmm. Certainly not in those conditions with the way it was going.
But isn't it so cool to see a rider who is absolutely on the top of their game, hitting that stuff? Even the top section, there was a jump, and then there was a left-right berm section, and then what seemed to be the most horrible root garden with stumps, and you're like, oh,
I'm sure Giatin came off there a couple of years ago, actually.
Maybe.
In that section. However, Bruni, what a man.
Did you hear what Bruni said after he won? He said, oh, because it's at the top of the pits are. He said, oh, yeah, I saw...
He saw
Verger's time.
Yeah.
And knowing how fast he had gone, he just said, I was scared. I just knew I had to be scared. Like, absolutely.
Yeah,
but it was funny hearing some of the reactions from some of the riders. Like, Brooke McDonald had a decent early on ride through there when he came through the line. He was like, holy crap, it's so loose out there.
So,
he's like a rider that seems to have strengths in those conditions.
Yeah. Brooke McDonald was sixth place.
Yeah, so a hell of a ride by him.
When you look at Brooke McDonald's time, Brooke McDonald was...
it was a good time when he came through, wasn't it?
He was going to...
I thought
Jack, I've actually put it too small there. I can't see what the time difference was. I think it was 7 seconds. Steve? Actually, Brooke McDonald was actually 6 seconds off. But, you know, for a guy who was absolutely pushing things to the limit.
So what was third place time?
Well, you're testing me there, darling.
Sorry.
It's on your screen there. I should have put the font type bigger.
Third place was Omri Peyron, 3.4 back.
3.4.
Oh, so that was in that. No. That's
Squallies.
Squallies.
Troy Brosnan.
Brosnan, right? Yeah.
1.2 back.
Yeah.
So there you go. So guys, Bruni won the race. Incredibly well. Now it's started me thinking. Actually, do you know what? Is Loic Bruni now the most successful specialised downhill male racer ever? And so I looked at some facts. Well, actually, Gwyn won 5 races for Specialized over 3 years, between 2013 and 2015. He only had one, actually, when Gwyn moved to Specialized, he only had one podium in his first year, but he had four wins in 2015, which was pretty mental. And then, of course, you look at the Sam Hill years. Now, Sam Hill rode for Specialized between 2008 and 2012. He won 4 times in 5 years. So Loic Bruni's doing all right.
Yeah.
He's doing all right.
Yeah, but it's funny, hey, how before Loic Bruni did come along, historically Specialized had been somewhere where perhaps riders would come off an amazing crest. And then, I mean, Gwyn got it right in the end.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, oh my God, they've got one of the biggest manufacturers and the biggest talent, they are going to dominate. And with the previous cases, it hasn't always been the way.
Mm. Yeah, totally.
Do you think it's now a case of... Were all the teams different? Were the people behind the team...
Well, this is it. Now it's an agency running it. Mm. And I think they basically are able to make it the Loic project with
Owens, for sure.
And Specialized and the tyres they want. And everything is just as so.
Yeah. Guys, we're sat in the south of England, chatting about World Cup racing. I feel I'm a bit worried. We're in a bit of a lean period of British male downhill racing. It's nearly 3 years now since Danny Hart won a World Cup, and which was also at Val Nord. Should we be worried?
Well, I got 5th, so...
Yeah.
And that was a hell of a run as well.
Yeah. Before Danny Hart, we looked at Josh Briceland in 2014, who's no longer racing. Should we be worried or not?
I'm not sure we should at the moment.
Well, I think
Walker's coming through, and Walker,
Bernard's showing.
I feel like Walker, he needs his head screwed on a bit. Like, he's there, his riding skills there, his fitness is there, his mental game is strong. I think he just needs a little bit more of that racing head, and he's on it.
Do you?
Like, it's unbelievable.
Just playing, just as
it's
a
avocado,
devil's avocado. Yeah.
Here we go.
With the collapse of the BDS, do you think that this... I don't think it is a crisis.
No.
But if we were to say it is on a decline, do you think that this is what happens when the National Series goes?
I don't know. I mean, I'm going to come to you next with what's happened to the French. Now, the French won 7 World Cups in 16 years. That was the era between 2002 and 2017. Mm-hmm. Like 7 World Cup wins in that huge amount of time. Now they've actually won 8 in the last 2 years. I think 8 of the past 10, Jack, is that right? Or 8 of the past 11 or something like that? I mean, that is some turnaround. In the last 2 years, they have become the force of downhill.
Yeah, but do you not feel there's an element perhaps where talented French riders have found themselves on very good bikes.
Ooh.
Commensal, V10, Specialized, all fantastic. You look at, I mean, I don't, I'm not going to...
Do you believe there's good bikes and bad bikes?
Oh my God, yeah.
Ooh, this could be a subject we could talk about. God. Not that we don't do reviews.
Look,
look at.
Definitely in downhill, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the biggest things, in my opinion, and I'm not saying I'm, you know, the gospel on it, the biggest thing is pit or team environment and you, in the setup. You see some teams that have bad pit environments and they are poorly managed, and that's just sadly the reality. And you see sometimes riders go from a factory setup to a privateer setup and they are released and unburdened by both. They can run what bike they want. How many every privateer this year is either on a YT or a Commensal? And you're seeing some people get fantastic results coming from setups where they've been like, this bike might not even fit you. Literally as basic as that. You know, this bike, some people want something specific out of a tire. You can't have that. We want something specific out of a fork. You don't have that option. And that, for me, is the single biggest factor. French talented riders who are hard workers have found themselves. The Commensal setup is fantastic, not just in what they run, but in the atmosphere around the team. It's super well run. Well, the Specialized is fantastic. The Santa Cruz almost has like a glowing aura of just contentness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you go and you go to something and there's, you know, it's just like somebody just scratching their arse and then Alan Key and you're like, different vibe here, lads, different vibe. You know, I know that's to me, that's it.
Steve, you're the only, maybe Henry has, but you're the only one that's been in that Commensal. Would you say that's...
The Commensal was actually...
quite a bit older.
On my previous job, that you told me the Commensal bike, Jack.
Yeah, yeah.
The bike that Pierre's riding, that's actually the last bike I tested for the magazine. And when I got it, I thought, this guy's going to do well on this bike. And I actually rode it down Val Nord. And that's why I know that it's an absolute nightmare of a track to ride down. So go on.
I was going to say, one last little example. Like my last thing. Eddie Masters has gone from running a team in Bergamont to just being able to train. Get a salary, no worries from Pivot. Sure. And his results has gone...
Yeah. Do you know what? I'd really like to see Bernard get a pro gym again this year.
His run was...
I mean, in terms of stylish riders and characters, Bernard Kerr is definitely up there. I just want to touch on one more thing about the French. Now, there seems to be a big fuss that the French are amazing, which they are doing very well. But actually, it is nothing compared to the force they were in the late 90s and 2000s. They actually won, between 98 and 2001, they won 20 World Cup races. They were absolutely phenomenal. You know, the likes of Vulios, Gracia, Michael Pascal, Christian Taillefer, Fabien Barrel. I mean, they really were a force. It's obviously like it's taken 20 years for it to come around again.
And the champs as well.
Oh, the world
Rico,
champs?
Yeah.
Well, absolutely, yeah. I mean, world championships was dominated by the French. So, great racing, guys, on the weekend. Really intense. I mean, it's great, really good to chat tech with you. I think we should do more of this in the future. There's so many you know, comparisons between bikes for different disciplines and materials and suspension and tyres. I couldn't believe that a World Cup cross-country racer runs less than 20 PSI.
Yeah, lighter riders can get away with that.
Yeah,
does it make your bike lighter having less air in the tyres?
Helium
in the tyres. Yeah,
so there you go. That's podcast number 11. Jack, I don't know how to wrap thing podcast up.
We'll
be back
for Edo West next weekend on Monday.
Right.
And that'll be Neil back by then, back from BC.
Hopefully, yeah.
So that's it for podcast number 11. The Don will be back from British Columbia on Monday, reporting on the next EWS.